The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hi, this is Dana Stevens, Slate's movie critic, and I'm here with the Slate spoiler special podcast on I Love You, Man. Joining me is John Swansburg, our culture editor at Slate.
Hi, great to be here.
Hey, John. So, I Love You, Man.
Yeah.
No, really.
You loved I Love You, Man more than I loved
Yeah, I think so. We saw it together last night, and I was saying as we were walking out, I could feel the differential waves of liking, you know, flowing through across
you
the theater.
You laughed out loud more than I did. I think you couldn't see it, but I was smiling at some moments where you were laughing.
But overall, you were disappointed in this movie.
Well, to say disappointed would indicate that
high expectations in the first place.
Higher expectations than perhaps I did. I enjoyed it. I think we both felt that the two leads are actors who we really admire a lot, and we'll sort of are willing to give a long leash to, this being Paul Rudd and Jason Segel, and they are winning enough that they carried me through the movie through a movie that I thought had some moments that were slightly approaching wince worthy,
right?
But there are moments that were really great, and they're actually, in addition to Segel and Rudd, there's some great side performances too. In particular, Jon Favreau, who we should talk about maybe later, but he has only a couple scenes, but he totally steals them.
Well, let's talk about what the movie's trying to do, first of all. Okay, it's sort of a romantic comedy, right?
Yeah.
But the focus of the main relationship that we focus on is actually this platonic relationship between two heterosexual men, which is
right.
Sort of, you know, what the movie has new to bring to the table,
I guess,
that it's about the exploration of male friendship. Do you want to set it up a little bit?
Sure.
We start off, Paul Rudd is about to, or has just gotten engaged, right?
Right, he's just gotten engaged, and it sort of, as the wedding preparations are going on, his fiance kind of realizes he doesn't have any male friends. She has like a tight-knit group of girlfriends, but he doesn't. She's worried, I think, as a very practical matter, who's going to walk all of her girlfriends down the aisle, because Paul Rudd doesn't have any male friends. And her girlfriends sort of start talking up to her how that's a problem. He's going to be a naggy husband because he's always going to be at home, and when she goes out with her friends, he's not going to have any friends to hang out with.
Well, so, we should also mention that Paul Rudd's character is set up very early on in this very sweet way as being this sort of extremely uxorious, girlfriend-centric man, right?
Right.
He's bringing root beer floats to his friends and to his girlfriend and her friends, and is sort of, you know, just likes hanging out with the women at work more than the men.
Right. Yeah. They very in a nice touch of subtlety. You kind of throughout the movie, he has this great rapport with all the women in his office, but can't quite seem to connect with men. So the beginning of the movie, once it becomes clear that it's important to his wife that he get some friends, he decides to embark on this quest to find some male friendship. And I think there's some funny moments at the beginning when he has a bunch of missteps trying to meet men. His mother sets him up on a man date, as they are fond of calling it in the movie, to my chagrin. With a guy who she's heard about through one of her friends. And, of course, it turns out this guy that she sets him up with is gay and thinks it's a date, which leads to a very awkward kiss between Paul Rudd and his date. So that's sort of one of the false starts, to say the least. And then there are several others. His fencing buddies, Paul Rudd's a fencer, was sort of a weird detail. They have a sort of kind of fratty, jockey kind of hangout sessions after their fencing practice, and Paul Rudd kind of tries to get on that but can't quite make it work.
And then eventually he does finally meet the man of his dreams,
right.
Jason Segel, who, oh, we forgot to mention that Paul Rudd's a real estate agent, right?
Right.
So he's showing a house which happens to be Lou Ferrigno's estate, this
right.
very showy L.A. house in the hills. And this dude who's crashing the open house essentially to eat the sandwiches, played by Jason Segel, kind of befriends him, and the two of them start to form a real friendship.
Right, right. And Jason Segel's character is introduced in this scene that I found sort of annoying. I think you did also, where he's crashing the Lou Ferrigno open house mainly so he can eat the sandwiches and try to meet a divorcee. And he does a sort of weird kind of quasi Sherlock Holmes thing where he sort of points out this guy and his girlfriend and kind of guesses all this stuff about them and says, oh, they're not really interested in buying the house, even though they said they were. And also the guy has gas. And of course, it turns out that the couple isn't really interested in buying it. And the guy does have gas. And that's sort of his way of winning Paul Rudd's admiration. And I thought that part was really stupid. But then Jason Segel's character does end up growing into this kind of three-dimensional, at least for the purposes of this genre, character who is kind of fun to spend time with.
And well, there's some sort of a kind of civilization versus savagery theme going on, right? The
right.
idea being that he's going to sort of teach Paul Rudd to be a man. Now, unlike you, I sort of thought that this movie had a, for its genre, somewhat complex conception of male friendship and what it is to be a man. And it certainly could have been there could have been a lot more fratty American Pie scenes where Jason Segel was teaching him to belch or something like that.
Right.
I actually thought that their friendship was kind of nicely drawn.
I agree with that. And Jason Segel, yeah, he wasn't this sort of annoying jockey caricature of malehood. He was a really weird guy. For instance, he wears UGG boots in pretty much every scene.
Yeah, inexplicably, he's always wearing OP Pacific kind of beach shorts with UGG boots.
Yeah,
on Venice
and
beach.
A scarf. And he has a puggle named Anwar Sadat because it looks exactly like Anwar Sadat, which I thought was actually the funniest joke in the whole movie. There was a great cutaway shot of a Time magazine cover with Sadat on it at one point. The dog really does kind of look like Anwar Sadat.
They must have had to comb rescue pounds all over America to find that dog.
Exactly. But Jason Segel is like also he's sort of a layabout, but also turns out to be a successful investor. And I don't know, he's just kind of an interesting character. But yeah, he's not some kind of dopey Will Ferrell frat pack type. He's more interesting than that, I think.
Nor is Paul Rudd's character, you know, the totally stereotyped, uptight, you know, buttoned up real estate dude, right?
Right. I think one thing I didn't like about the movie that seemed to bother you less was that, so a big recurring theme in the movie is Jason Segel sort of has this kind of effortless cool to him, and Paul Rudd wants to have that. And so, for instance, each time the two of them have had a hangout session and then they're parting, Jason Segel says something cool like, all right, man, see you next time, and like comes up with a funny nickname for Paul Rudd, to which Paul Rudd tries to respond with something funny that sounds effortless and cool, but instead kind of mangles it. He often, when he tries to do voices, always sounds like a leprechaun. And the first couple of times he does that and fails to sound effortless and cool, it's funny, but it was kind of belabored. It's just every time. It seemed like in every scene, Paul Rudd was trying to be cool and failing in the kind of the same way.
I agree. Those jokes were overly milked. But on the upside, a lot of them sounded ad-lib to me. And I think I just find Paul Rudd a lot funnier than you do. He never fails to crack me up.
That may be. I mean, I thought some of them were quite funny. And some of the stuff that he mumbles or comes up with at one point, I think the first one he says, Jason Segel's like, all right, see you next time, Pistol, because the character's name is Pete. Paul Rudd's character's name is Pete. And Paul Rudd would come back and say, like, all right, see you next time, Jobin, which is just a word he made up. And it's really funny. They kind of used that joke a couple times, but I thought Jobin was really kind of clever and definitely seemed like the kind of thing that Paul Rudd might have just come up with on the spot. It's hard to imagine that having been in the screenplay.
So let me stop you right there for one quick word from our sponsor, Audible.com. As you know, the number one source of audio entertainment on the web. We have a deal with them right now where if you sign up for a trial membership through our page, which is www.audiblepodcast.com/spoiler, you get a free audiobook, which you can hold on to even if you give up on your membership after the 2-week trial session. So I have a recommendation connected to I Love You, Man. Again, somewhat of a remote connection, but I was thinking about the civilization versus savagery theme, you know, that we picked up on in this movie. And of course, that's a huge theme in American literature, as is male friendship. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help thinking of Huckleberry Finn with maybe Jason Segel in the gym role and and Paul Rudd as Huck. So we went searching for Huckleberry Finn on Audible, and there's lots of different versions of it, abridged, unabridged. But the one that most intrigued me, although it is abridged, which seems somewhat unfortunate for a great book like Huckleberry Finn, but it's read by Jack Lemmon, which is pretty enticing. So I was going to recommend you give that a try.
Right.
Do you want to talk at all about the heterosexual relations in this movie? Like, what did you think of its sort of vision of gender and of the women characters?
Well, I think, you know, as we've been saying, the male relationship is quite well drawn and sort of deeper and more textured than you might imagine in a movie like this. Unfortunately, the women are not particularly three-dimensional. Paul Rudd's wife is just kind of there. The most interesting relationship between man and woman is actually between Rudd's fiance and friend and John Favreau, who I mentioned earlier. They have this very weird relationship where it's incredibly antagonistic, although strangely can be sweet also. But Favreau plays this really kind of jerky guy, this kind of portrait of the real kind of asshole guy who seems not to like his own wife very much and is always kind of trying to blackmail her into having kinky sex with him, and is occasionally seen chewing on a toothpick in this way, and he and Favreau kind of seems like he's beefed up for the role. He just looks like a nasty guy. But there's a weird way in which his relationship with his wife, while when you first see it seems like completely dysfunctional, there's like a certain sweetness that comes about at the end where they actually I don't know. There seems to be something a little bit more there. Am I reading too much into that?
No, I like that relationship too. It was very small, extremely broadly comic, but kind of well played by him and by Jamie Presley as
right.
the wife.
Right.
And I thought because there was this sort of negative model of what marriage could be, you know, this sort of like right. ugly, snarling marriage being constantly in the background, that Paul Rudd might drop out of his marriage at one point. I mean, as long as we're spoiling, there's a moment about 2 weeks before his wedding when he starts to get cold feet and say, why are we doing this? And,
right.
you know, his wife understandably is freaking out. And I sort of thought, well, maybe the movie will go in some interesting direction where this friendship actually did show him that he wasn't quite mature enough or ready to be married or not to this person or whatever. But, I mean, of course, it's a romantic comedy, so it does have to end up, you know, under the chuppah or whatever.
Right, right. And there were the wedding scene is... is how the movie ends, and I think that was something that bothered you, the way that the ending played out.
Well, it's just that wedding scenes in romantic comedies are always interrupted. Has anyone ever gotten married in a romantic comedy without somebody riding a motorcycle in at the last minute?
Right,
and, you know, either objecting, which doesn't happen in this movie, or, you know, having some sort of a heart-to-heart right in front of the whole congregation. You know, that of course has to happen with the two men. And
right.
it just goes on for so long that even in the context of this movie, it seems utterly absurd.
Yeah, and it's funny, you actually don't get any of the vows between Paul Rudd and his wife-to-be. It's the only real exchange of any kind of emotional... merit happens between Jason Segel and
well,
Paul
it's the
Rudd.
First moment in the movie that you start to sort of sympathize with Brigida Jones, who plays the wife to be of Paul
right.
Rudd, and think like, well, this guy is sort of taking over a disproportionate amount of my man's life.
Exactly, exactly. I guess the one thing I would say in defense of that sort of drawn out wedding scene is at the very end, there's a funny exchange where, of course, Paul Rudd, over the course of the movie, has finally achieved the ability to have a kind of cool exchange with Jason Segel, and they exchange. I don't even know how I would describe it. They exchange these kind of epithets for one another.
Well, they start to say "I love you," right? First,
right.
Paul Rudd says "I love you, man."
That's
the
right.
title of the movie, and then
Paul Rudd says
Segel
"I love you," I love you, dude. And then they go, "I love you, bro."
I love you, Tico Brahe.
I love you, Tico Brahe. And then the craziest one that actually made me laugh a lot was it Segel who says it? I think it's Segel.
Yeah.
It says, "I love you, Brosef Goebbels," which is just like so, broke down so many walls and was just so bizarre and kind of tasteless, but also sort of amazing and not what I was expecting. So that was pretty great. I mean, that was connected to something. I liked that moment, but it was connected to something I didn't like about the movie, which is that whole sort of like bro lingo thing. Brosef Goebbels works because it's so absurd. It's different than anything I've heard before. But the whole kind of bro thing connected back to me, to a bunch of other sort of jokes that fell kind of flat in the movie that just sort of felt like things that are about to be dated or maybe are already dated. Like I said, the continual references to mandate, there was a certain sense in which it felt like the script was written with a bunch of issues of the New York Times style section open. There was like, they kept mentioning mandates. They kept talking about a man cave. Jason Segel is a man cave. There were a couple of lame Facebook jokes. It just sort of, it felt like it was trying to have this kind of like hip contemporary, you know, send up of our social mores. But it felt like if you watched this in 6 months, it would be like, oh God, really? You're making a Facebook joke? So that's a thin line. I mean, I think sometimes they're on the right side of it and sometimes they weren't. Brosef Goebbels was on the right side for me. But
all right. Well, thank you, bro, for joining me.
I love doing these, man.
Sorry. I'm like Paul Rudd. This is why I love Paul Rudd so much. I am Paul Rudd. All right. Thanks
it's okay,
for joining
Jobin.
Me. Thanks for joining me, Jobin, for this late spoiler special.
Always a pleasure.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.